Blog Talk Radio.
I lift up the jeweled breast. I lift up the amber lips. I lift up the shadowed eyes. I lift up
Good evening and welcome, listeners. I hope you join me in celebrating the return of the light, Candlemas, Imbolc, and the season of Bridget. You know, I just love the idea that Bridget is a goddess of the sacred healing waters, and she's also goddess of fire. You put those two together and you get steam. That's a force that pushes us forward, encourages us to step up and step out. It activates us. It might be thought of as a catalyst for transformation. And isn't that what our world needs so badly? But of course, it needs change in the right direction. So let us, during this time, focus on shedding the old, what no longer works, what no longer serves the many. And let us ask Bridget to fill us, to fill that vacant space with wondrous new possibilities, abundance, creativity, healing, energy, and energy for activism. Because remember, women, we're just not the hands that rock the cradles, as I like to say and remind us all the time. We are the hands that must broker the deals that change the world. So shall it be. Well, many of you out there might be about to listen to our President's State of the Union address, and if you are, that's okay. You can hear this show later from the archives. But if you're with me live, I invite you to call in, and I thank those of you who have emailed in questions for our guest tonight, the wonderful and inspirational author and activist Jean Shinoda Bolen, who wrote Urgent Message from Mother Earth, Gather the Women, Save the World. She is certainly one of our foremothers and way-showers, if ever there was one. And I have to give a shout out to the wonderful artists who so generously allow me to use their music. I want to give a plug tonight to Zingaya, and some of that music you were listening to was called Veil of Inanna. And also to a few listeners I want to give a shout out. First, there's Maria from the UK. She wrote me this week and she said, just wanted to say thanks for Voices of the Sacred Feminine. I discovered it in early December when I was off work with the flu. And what a great week I had, lying around with my MP3 player plugged into my ears, listening to your fascinating guests. I listened all through Christmas and New Year's, too, and during a trip to Cyprus in early January. I was very pleased to have you with me when my plane was delayed for 9 hours because of snow. I'm now pacing myself because I've almost finished listening to the archive shows, and I don't want them to end. Well, thank you very much, Maria. And also Mary Etta from Boston, I want to thank her as well. She says she has copies of my books and listens to the radio show from the archives, and she's enjoyed it very much. Most recently, she heard Louisa Teish, who was terrific, and Isaac Bonowitz, Rhianne Eisler, Starhawk, and she's looking forward to the series Four Mothers and Way Showers. So thank you, Mary Etta. And there's also Robin, who wrote me. Robin said, please keep doing what you're doing. I do believe the time for more understanding and appreciation is coming and coming soon. I've downloaded your archived radio shows onto my iPod, and I have to tell you, I anxiously await my workout times because I only listen to you at that time. It motivates me to get my sneakers on and get moving. And I'll definitely be purchasing your book, Walking an Ancient Path. So thank you, Robin. It's really good to hear from all of you out there. And as a reminder, before we get to today's guest, Jean Shinoda Boland, who has not called in yet, I want to remind you we've moved the sometimes controversial but always informative What's the Buzz segment to the bottom of the show. However, if Jean doesn't call in soon, we might put it at the top of the hour, this show. That's the segment when I tell you about the bees that have been buzzing around in my bonnet all week, where we show how the sacred feminine or her ideals are relevant in today's world. And it's where I'm an equal opportunity whistleblower when women's rights are being trampled or oppressed, or anyone's for that matter. As I've said before, and it's worth repeating over and over, the goddess is about lots of things, including equality, justice, harmony, balance, and tolerance. So when these values aren't being adhered to, well, I'm going to mention it. And, of course, we sprinkle in good news, too, wherever we can find it. So stay tuned with me tonight for the What's the Buzz segment. We're going to be covering the following topics. Well, it looks like Jean just may have called in. Let me take a second here. Hey, Jean, is that you?
Well, yes, but I confirmed and called, and it said that there was nothing going on, and the show is not on.
Well, not to worry. You're here with us now. You're barely late at all. I was just introducing the show. So,
Is this Karen?
Yes, it is. And this is Jean, right?
Yes, it is. And I called when I was supposed to call and was told there wasn't any program on.
I'm so sorry. I'm not sure what happened with Blog Talk, but I hope none of the other listeners have a problem. You know what? Why don't you just take a breath and de-stress from all that confusion, and I'll finish making the announcement I was making, and then we'll get right to you, and we'll have a wonderful chat. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jean. I so appreciate you calling in, and I am so sorry. I don't know what the confusion was. But as I was saying, listeners, stay tuned to the end of the show where we have our What's the Buzz segment. Some of the things we're going to talk about tonight are we have an interesting statement that was made from the Prime Minister in Australia for Muslims who want to live under Islamic Sharia law. You know, that's the law where men can basically rape their wives and, you know, commit other atrocities that we probably wouldn't think are very good things. We'll also have part two of an interesting article I came across that was food for thought, Are Americans Too Broken for the Truth to Set Us Free? It asks if we've become too passive as a people, if our morale can actually be restored. We have some feedback from a petition that the feminist majority sent to Iran I want to tell you about. And last week I posed the question, and I pose it again and ask for feedback via call-ins or emails. Are you concerned about the anti-intellectualism movement, the dumbing down of America? If you have any comments about that, I'd love to hear from you later on in the show, because that's sure a constant bee in my bonnet. And I think we'll close the What's the Buzz segment later on tonight with an article from Nicholas Kristof, author of the fabulous and important book for women, Half the Sky, and we'll talk about one of his articles from his New York Times column, and this topic, this time his topic is religion and women. So if you sent in any of those articles for me to share, you know who you are. I guess I just want to say thank you. And please stay tuned while those bees vent their relief later on in the show. And if you'd like to call in and talk to our guest or talk to me later, the number is 718-766-4662. I hope you don't have any problems calling in, because Jean reports that there was a little confusion when she tried to call in a few minutes ago. Please let me know, because I want to report that to Blog Talk if our guests and our listeners are having trouble reaching the host. And before I forget, you can always email in questions in advance of the show if you can't listen live, or maybe you might not want to call in. We have listeners that do that quite frequently. So please consider calling in and speaking to either myself or our foremother in Waysho with Jean Shinoda Boland. Well, let me read you something from Jean's website, and it goes like this. Dear friends, I continue to take my assignment as a message carrier to heart. I believe that critical mass, grassroots activism transforms consciousness, which in turn changes history. I believe that humanity is at a crossroads and that women do, and what women do in the next few decades will determine the fate of life on this beautiful, abundant planet. Those words are from Jean Shinoda Bolen, and let me tell you a bit about Jean. Let me just mention some of her books. She has a two-page curriculum vitae, and her books include The Tao of Psychology, Synchronicity and the Self, Goddesses in Every Woman, A New Psychology of Women, Gods in Every Man, A New Psychology of Men's Lives and Loves, Ring of Power, Symbols and Themes in Wagner's Ring Cycle and in Us, Crossing to Avalon, A Woman's Midlife Pilgrimage, Close to the Bone, Life-Threatening Illness and the Search for Meaning, The Millionth Circle, How to Change Ourselves and the World, Goddesses and Older Women, Archetypes in Women Over 50, Crones Don't Whine, that came out in 2003, and her most recent book that I'm aware of, Urgent Message from Mother, Gather the Women and Save the World. Jean, what an incredible body of work you have. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, I wanted to ask you, there's so much else here on your bio, and you have lots of awards and recognitions. While they're all important, do any of them stand out as maybe being closest to your heart or the most meaningful to you?
Well, I most recently was recognized by my greater neighborhood and got something called the Millie Award for my writing. And I appreciated that because somehow it's just nice to have one's own town say something about what I've been doing. But mostly I actually get around on a lot more than locally, and I wanted to say something about responding to the whole notion of assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with especially for women, once the nest is empty, where there is some extra time available and some sense of wanting to give back and some sense of gratitude that if we have the energy and the health and the mind can make a difference, how satisfying it is to join other women and do something to make this world a better place. And so that's really what my energies are directed towards. I will be going to the United Nations in March for the Commission on the Status of Women, what they call parallel events, where NGOs come together. And there are so many good NGOs that are looking after women and children, and there's so many awful problems in the world.
Jean, what are NGOs?
They're non-governmental organizations. They're the kind of things that, often a woman or a couple of women get together and realize that there's a problem and they have some kind of solution, and so they start an organization, and they're multiplying. So there are lots of them. And there are lots of women's circles that are forming, too.
Well, I know you have something called the Million Circle, which I want to talk about, but I know most of the people who emailed me definitely, and we'll get to that Million Circle and some of your other stuff like Standing for Peace, that thing you promote for Mother's Day, and there's also stuff I want to talk about from your article on your website, The Antidote, but most people really wanted to hear about the Fifth World Conference on Women. Can you talk about that?
This is what I'm out there being an advocate for. It seems so sensible, so reasonable, so what will make a difference in the world, because there's a whole notion of reaching a critical mass and tipping point. It's a grassroots thing in which we saw the women's movement change the world, and it just appeared to be women sitting together talking in consciousness-raising groups. Well, now we have the Internet, we have all these great means of communicating, and we've got all of us that are the products of the women's movement and therefore have gotten around and all. And now it's time for there to be another Women's World Conference. The last one was in 1995 in Beijing. And this was at that conference where Hillary Clinton, as a president's wife, gave this stirring, women's rights are human rights are women's rights talk. And that's still the message, because in so many parts of the world, that is not yet true. So I found when I went to the UN, I kind of expected that if there was one, in, there'd be one every 5 years or 10 years at the very least. And I found in 2002 that there was not only not going to be one in 2005, but there were none planned for the future at all. It's like the age of the conferences had passed for women. And that was when the Million Circle as an organization also went to the UN, and we started seeding circles there, because the notion is that the more there are, the easier it becomes for more and more to form. And I have a petition that really puts it all out, and that's really the main thing that I would love this program to encourage your audience to do. And the easiest way to do it is to go to my website and click on the front page where it says petition, and it'll take you right there.
And your website is just jeanboland.com.
Yeah, right.
So it's easy enough to find.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where are you at with this, Jean? Is it looking like it's going to happen? What's the progress?
It's one of those things. It's slow. For one thing, it had to wait until the climate in the world changed. While the Bush administration was sending representatives to the Commission on the Status of Women, nothing could happen. There was just a great concern that all the good documents, though not implemented, could be dismantled. So there was that concern. Well, now we have a different administration and very different appointees to the various places that matter. And there has been a movement within the UN, non-government organizations, to have a super agency for women. That is a agency that would be like UNICEF is for children,
yeah.
A big agency, prominent, that could raise money, that would have status with the head of it being very much high up there, like right underneath the Secretary General. And that has been a five-year effort, which was successful. Last September, the General Assembly voted for there to be a women's super agency, and the person who heads it is to be announced in March.
Wow.
Who is. So, I mean, it's like this is exciting because
yeah.
Depending on who that is and what her energy is, and okay, this is 2010, super agency gets formed. Say, give it a year to really get moving. What the UN is talking about, the Commission on the Status of Women, is something that goes over what's happened since Beijing. This is called the Beijing Plus 15 Review, which means 15 years after Beijing, what has been accomplished of those 12 areas of concern that were written out in the Platform for Action from Beijing. So, of course, we're going to do a review and find that, of course, lots of things have happened, but the situation for women and girls is really pretty bad. So instead of having 5 years from 2010, Beijing plus 20, this is a perfect time to have a fifth Women's World Conference instead. And it would be the first one in the 21st century with even things like cell phones. Any person who is sent, who represents anybody and goes there can be in direct contact with people at home. They're now making these screens that a classroom in one place could talk to a classroom in another. By 2015, the capacity for an international conference to reach the 192 countries that belong to the UN and to let the women know, even if they are in a country in which they can't come, that there is such a thing and these are what the issues are, I think that it would really change the world, which is the whole point of things, that unless women with our particular abilities of communication, of compromise, of looking out for the kids, of being conservatives about using funds and energy well, you know, unless we are can balance what the guys are up to in this world, this planet is just going to go downhill.
I mean, absolutely.
What we need is women.
Well, at this stage, it's probably premature, but I'll ask anyway. Is there a target city if this can actually happen? Do you know where it would be? Would it be in New York?
What has to happen is that some country has to offer to be the host country. And, you know, like the Olympics, because I see this would be the equivalent of, like, the Olympics excitement for women.
Okay.
It's so that a country that sponsors it has to provide such things as security, which is a whole bunch of money, but their country has this influx of women who spend money there. So, I mean, it's a major economic kind of thing, too. So the countries that have come up in the history of working towards a fifth Women's World Conference, and one of the websites that I direct people to is 5WCW.org, which is for Fifth World Conference on Women. And we started in 2002 with the idea of it could be Brazil, which is possible. I mean, because Brazil had just elected a populist president and had hosted the World Social Forum and had created a cabinet-level Department of Women. So that seemed like one possibility. Another possibility that I know of now is Switzerland, because Elie Pradervan, who is a convener of the Million Circle, is actually talking to a minister there. Then there is Canada as a possibility. And I have a feeling that a country that could really carry it off might be India, which is the largest democracy in the world. It has both third world country problems, and it also has first world country, you know, equivalent of Silicon Valley and Bangalore. And they certainly have their competitors with China, and China held the last one in Beijing. Why can't India do one in New Delhi? You know, this is one thought. So might as well seed it and throw that idea out in the world, because essentially when you're a citizen activist advocate, it's like sparking something. The actual carrying it forward, I have no idea who would do it. It has to be picked up by someone else who says and feels, this is my assignment. I want my country to do this, or I want my organization to get behind it. And so there's no, like, direct hierarchy or chart that says the idea goes from here to here to here to here. It really goes grassroots, like dandelions, you know, seeds.
I see, yeah. Well, now, you said that at the last conference in Beijing, all of those years ago in 95, there were 12 areas that they wanted to focus on. Do you recall what some of those are, and do you have anything you can share with listeners on if things got better or worse in those areas?
Well, the first one is about the girl child, for example. It's about girls and how, I mean, we even have words for bad things that are happening now that I don't even know if there was a word for trafficking in 1995. And now we know that girls and women are brought as sexual object commodities from one country to another. And we also know that there are a great many girls who get rescued, and there's a media attention on them. And so there's that. And then there's the whole bringing media interest into consciousness. And then there's women, I should find it in my, you know, the labeling of them. There are 12 areas of concern that have to do with immigrant women, women in work, women, rural women.
Gee, Jean, let me ask you a question. And this is something, and this isn't, I really don't mean this as church bashing. I guess maybe it is critical, but it's an observation. You know, we see, and you remind me of this because I was recently at a showing of a film called Svetlana's Journey, which was about the trafficking of women. And the subject came up in the Q&A with the producer later that, you know, the church put so much money into, you know, fighting abortion rights, into fighting, so that gays can't marry. You know, it seems like they're, you know, while there are, you know, Christian missionaries and things like that, it just seems like they don't put enough emphasis on women's issues, and maybe I'm missing something, and
no,
maybe
you're not,
you can.
You're not missing anything at all.
So what is that about?
Issue,
Does this go back to the oppression of women in the church?
This goes back to the very basic foundation of patriarchy in Judeo-Christian and Muslim worlds. It's the theology of Genesis 2. It has to do with giving, making women created out of the rib of Adam to be his helpmate and to obey him and all of this stuff. So that's part of it. But the part of it that has to do with, I mean, there's a horrible history. It has a history that says, well, if it says that Eve is and Adam are banished from the Garden of Eden and cursed so that she is to bear children in great pain, then the first women to go to the stake in the Inquisition were the midwives, because they were helping women with the pain of childbirth, and that was considered going against God's will. So there's been a problem of God being interpreted by authoritarian, misogynist men is really what's happened. And the idea of such things as why, for example, in Copenhagen, with global warming the issue, why, when we know that the problem is both that we are using up the resources and the reason we're using up the resources is the population explosion,
mm-hmm.
that if we cannot have reproductive rights, I mean, one of the things that have come out of so many of these women's conferences is the statistics and the awareness that when you give women and when you educate women, they marry later, they have less children, and the children are educated and healthier. And so educating women, giving them reproductive rights, is the easiest way to stop the population explosion. In Haiti, for example, there are so many children that were put up for adoption because the people could not afford to feed them. This was even before the earthquake. But family planning was opposed successfully by the Catholic Church. The opposition of the Catholic Church to reproductive rights so impacts women, because without reproductive rights, women have no control over their own body.
So is this misogyny, ignorance, control, all of the above?
Well, I don't know it certainly has a lot to do with seeing women as other and not like the dominant people who are men, and therefore it seems to be pretty impossible for them to imagine how it might be to be in a woman's body, to be raped and not have any control over whether you bear this child and another child and another child, and how can you get, I mean, there's something about that basic human, and that's a human right. This is when you say women's rights are human rights. The human right to have the freedom of your own body. Now, I think that when you're an evolved and spiritual person, that the whole issue of abortion after a certain point is a major spiritual issue. But there is the choice. I mean, when condoms are are not allowed, and AIDS is going rampant. And when there's some mythology going on that was very typical through the Middle Ages as well, the Middle Ages disease was the introduction of syphilis. This now is AIDS, and that the idea that a man could cure the disease by having sex with a virgin has been going on. Oh, it's horrible. If you know a virgin is only 3 years old, then you, I mean, this is, there are children in Africa who are raped at because they're girls that are obviously virgin.
Well, and also going on in Africa, I think it was in Johannesburg or Uganda, there were reports of men who felt it was perfectly acceptable to commit, they called it corrective rape, on lesbians to sort of set them straight, you know. Or then you have the husbands. I mean, we're talking about rape, and I think when we think rape, we think, you know, not spousal rape. But then you do have spousal rape. You know, you have women who are raped by their husbands who won't wear condoms. And, I mean, and that's an issue, too, you know, even in marriage in some cultures and in some countries.
Well, when women are treated as property, all of that goes along with it. I mean, if you don't have human rights as an equal human being, but you are the property of somebody else, then you can be treated very well and specially, you know, like a tree or like an animal. You can be a beloved pet, or you can be beaten and sold. I mean, really, if you're not treated as somebody with human rights, which is the very basic reason for having, really needing a Women's World Conference that would keep pushing that particular overall perspective, that women's rights are human rights. We're not getting it yet.
Well, and I was appalled, too, when Jimmy Carter had the courage to come out and leave his church and, you know, and form that group, the elders, that, you know, I was amazed that it wasn't even a big story, you know. It wasn't even a big story. I mean, unless you were in feminist groups, I don't think you really heard about it so much. It didn't make a big splash that it really deserved to make, and that's really a shame.
Well, that group of elders have been wise. You know, they're not, that was Jimmy Carter and Bishop Tutu and Nelson Mandela, and Bishop Tutu gave me an extraordinary a blurb for Urgent Message for Mother. He said, "It's a book whose time has come. Our earth home and all forms of life in it are at grave risk. We men have had our turn and made a proper mess of things. We need women to save us. I pray that many will read Boland's work and be inspired then to act appropriately. Time is running out." I mean, that's really the message of Urgent Message for Mother and the reason for a fifth Women's World Conference and all. It is that we're at a kind of place for the planet and us where things can get better or get really very worse in probably our lifetimes.
Well, if you had to sort of give a synopsis of, you know, because I know you've been an activist out there in the world for, you know, for a good long time now, are you seeing signs of hope? I mean, like this, and forgive me if these seem trivial, but I thought the message that came from the movie Avatar was beautiful.
And oh, you I have, was too.
And,
absolutely.
And then you have the book, like Nicholas Kristof's book, and
right,
your book.
Right.
I mean, do you think we're reaching that 100th monkey or that morphic field?
I think, you see, this is why I call it grassroots. I think that it is actually moving through the grassroots, and given Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point, that shows how things, ideas can spread like an AIDS virus, a virtual virus. I think that though we don't see it yet, I do think that it really is moving through. And I think, you know, the Catholic Church, by the way, has come out against Avatar because it gets it that people were seeing the sacred in the earth.
Yes.
And the that's actually one of my current really strong interests. I'm writing a book called Like a Tree, which and then when you see the Avatar tree, you know.
yeah, absolutely.
This sense that there has been a desacralization of the world, that prior to a certain intellectual patriarchy, there was a sense that the earth and the trees and the mountains and that we are all part of the synchronistic world of oneness, really. You know, that's actually, I'm weaving a lot of things that may seem unrelated, but Jung's idea of synchronicity and the oneness of the Tao and Avatar and the potential to pick up on things and as in Finhorn and to listen to, and it's almost always wisdom that comes from women. I mean, it seems women are the more psychic gender, and given that you end up feeling foolish if you can't prove something rationally, women are very quiet about what they know from being perceptive, intuitive, psychic, that sort of thing. So I'd really like to encourage more women to trust what they know sort of in their bones or in their bodies or in their psychic realm and then have the courage to speak up for or do what it is that they are moved to do.
Well, Jean, how do we reach, and forgive me how I'm going to frame this, but how do we reach the Sarah Palin type of woman, you know? How do we reach the ones that just really aren't getting it?
We don't have to reach everybody. We just have to be a critical mass.
Okay.
I mean, see, one of the things in writing Goddesses in Every Woman is that was way back when the Equal Rights Amendment was an issue, and I understood from speaking and being active within the American Psychiatric Association, the puzzlement of we all looked and, you know, we are all rather similar in that we all had gone through the arduous business of becoming an MD and then a psychiatrist, and now we were all active in the American Psychiatric Association. Why is it that there was this group that I clearly affiliated with that would naturally support the ERA because, you know, if you're treated like a second-class citizen, it's not good for your mental health. One would think that any common sense woman, especially, would be for the ERA. But there was a whole another group of women who were not. And in puzzling about it, I ended up recognizing the archetypal difference, that there's a difference between if you're an Artemis, and Artemis was the goddess of the moon and goddess of the hunt, and she looked after the young of all living things, and she came to the rescue of her mother, and she was the archetype of the feminist or the sister. And then there was the goddess Athena, who was the father's daughter, who supported heroes, who wore armor, who was rational, strategic, and who never was moved by things emotional. And you have two types of women that are just different. And so I don't think you have to mobilize every woman, but I think the Artemis women who could hear the call need to be moved to do what they would more naturally do. And then there's this group of men who have been growing through the women's movement into their own feminine nature or nurturing nature. And again, this goes way back. There used to be that men who supported the goddess were really put down.
Mm-hmm. Well, you even have the Dalai Lama coming out now saying he's a feminist. That's awesome. Well, you had Matthew Fox came out a long time ago, and you have Llewellyn Vaughn coming out now. I'm sure you probably know. I had Father Roy Bourgeois on the show, who was, you know, almost ex. Well, I don't know if he ever actually got excommunicated from the Vatican, you know, for speaking out for women's ordination. But you know, there's a lot of men out there, you know, on the side of this.
And Matthew Fox, you know, was silenced for a year, but he came out after the year. During the year, he went and spoke to colleagues who were part of the liberation movement in the Catholic Church. And so he found he couldn't stay in the Catholic Church, so he's now an Episcopalian priest. But I remember him speaking about trickle-down grace, which I think is what happened. It used to be that grace filled with the world is filled with grace, that anybody had access to the sacred energies of the world. And then it sort of got all taken over by the authority church. And then you had to, and the men at the top had control over it and most of it, and they trickled it down if you were good and you did the right thing and all. And suddenly the world became objectified. It's like the world became an it, and everything becomes property. That's why I really like, by the way, Avatar. I think the message is actually a great message.
Well, it sort of gives you the sense that, you know, we have really lost our connection to the mystery. You know, that we're barely plugged in anymore, you know, and there's just so much that, you know, has been lost from our disconnection from each other and Mother Earth.
And from the whole sense of the spirit world. I mean, one of the things about that's the other problem recently that has come up through the current Pope is that he has said that we have to keep, to stay within, in good standing within that, the church there, that people should be kept on life support beyond whether they're, you know, they're not there anymore, they're not in their bodies. And certainly most people have a sense of having a soul and a body and would like to be kind of liberated from, I mean, especially people who are not afraid of dying. It seems to me that the order to keep people on life support forever
is cruel. It's cruel, really.
It's cruel to the body, but it also assumes that there's a fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's a good point.
I think, wait a minute. It's so common for there to be visitation dreams. It's so common for people to sense when somebody dies. There's a spirit world that so many people are connected with. However, it does seem to come more naturally to some women. Again, there's a difference archetypally between women. But mediumistic women who then are silenced because they are made to feel that they're of the devil or out of their minds or something.
Well, you know, I guess I just, you know, it is my hope that, I mean, when you think about the role that some Christians played in doing away with slavery, you know, it's my hope that, you know, some Christians will take on this, you know, this issue and do something about it, because really you're saying it's okay to oppress women, but you know, but slavery wasn't okay, you know, and so I mean, you know, there's a discrepancy there, at least in my mind anyway, and it's, you know, with the churches being so organized, I would just love to see you know, a movement within the church, but you know, maybe that's not realistic.
Well, there are churches and there are churches, you know. There's every church has a mystical element, and every church or synagogue or temple has a fundamentalist literal one. And it's usually the people, the men in power, that are the more fundamentalist power over doctrine committed people. And if there were more women I mean, all of the religions change when women become part of the membership and part of the clergy. So at the moment, with the exception of some clergy positions, just about anything that a man is able to enter as a profession or work can be done now by women. But it's a theology that needs to acknowledge the presence of the sacred feminine and the feminine for some real change to be made, because so much of what goes on in the world politically actually is based on the theology that underlies it.
Well, now, well, speaking of making that happen, you talk in your article, The Antidote, about circles of women as vessels for healing and the invisible power of women's circles and the historical power of women's circles. Did you want to talk about the power of women's circles?
Well, circles are wonderful, actually. I mean, this is a circle with a spiritual center. Which makes it different than a group, but a circle that acknowledges that within all of us and within the circle itself, there is a wisdom and compassion. In Jungian psychology, you could say that we have an innate sense of the numinous, or the innate sense of something larger than ourselves, which in psychology, Jungian psychology, would be called the largest self, and it is symbolized by the mandala, which is really the sacred circle. So if you hold, if you have, say, a women's reading group, and you wanted to change it into a sacred circle, just the idea would be that is, first of all, the intention. It's always the intention. If you have an intention, and it's a shared vision, and you get together, and you spend some time setting the intention, and then also having some silence to do whatever it is that feels right to do in the area of meditation or prayer. Then you tap into the energy that's there. It's sort of like imagining that there's like a spiritual aquifer that you can tap into, and if you meet around the well, so to speak, you tap into this energy, or if you meet around a hearth fire, you tap into the fire, and you sit around the rim, and around the rim, a circle is egalitarian. It isn't hierarchical. There isn't someone might lead a part of it or something, but it's basically not a dominant person over the rest in its form. And the more you meet, the more there gets to be kind of a morphic feel for that circle, and pretty soon it gets very easy to sort of move into what feels like sacred space, whether you call it that or not. And many women's groups will put a candle in the center because it's so natural to do that. That's archetypal, too. That's the ancient image of Hestia, the goddess of the hearth and temple, whose presence made home and temple sacred. So you step into an archetypal energy field when you hold a women's circle, and it nourishes you. I mean, the point of it is that it supports the women in it. And it's one more circle towards the metaphoric millionth circle, which is the one that tips the scales and truly could end patriarchy, because the hierarchical model gets changed to having as co-equal the model of the circle.
Okay. And which segues us into the group, the millionth circle. Did you want to elaborate a bit on that and say who can join or how do you create one?
Yes, well, it's an idea. So anyone who adopts the idea of being part of the millionth circle can just say they are. Simple as that. The idea being that each circle taps into the morphic field of all the circles that have come before and puts their energy into the field. So when you start a circle, you are doing something for yourself, but you're also doing something for the larger field. And at some point, it reaches a critical mass. And that metaphor critical number is that I named is the millionth circle. And I was inspired by the story of the 100th Monkey, which was the activist story that helped the anti-nuclear activists keep on keeping on when they were ridiculed. And, you know, people said, well, how do you what do you think you can do? You can change you can alter the arms race between the superpowers. And they had the story of the 100th Monkey, which is based on morphic field theory that said they used monkeys as the example of when all the monkeys on one island learned how to do this new thing. Lo and behold, the scientists realized that it wasn't just on this one island, but all the other islands that were not directly connected were now doing this new thing as well. So the anti-nuclear activists could say to themselves, it may appear that I am accomplishing nothing by having this storefront place of activism, but on the way to the 100th Monkey, which is a tipping point, unless I do this, when I could be the 7th one or the 99th one, but every single circle that forms is one more towards the greater goal. So I wrote the book called The Man Circle, which is a how-to book as well. It's both a vision and a how-to-do circle. And it serves as a seed packet, and it encouraged, I don't know, it got around. It got around to a woman, two women, three women who were going to South Africa for the World Parliament of Religions. They brought the book and the idea. They talked to a woman from the Netherlands and from Geneva, and then pretty soon I heard, as one of them came back from California, that they wanted to form something called On Circles, and could they use the name The Man Circle, and would I be willing to come to an organizing meeting? So it's become a mother circle of the idea. So there's another website called millioncircle.org, which has the conveners, the mother circle, and also has all kinds of resources, and also has a very good downloadable guidelines and principles of circle. So,
well, and it might, you know, and I think you sort of touched on the fact that, you know, if you're meeting in your small circle and you sort of don't feel like you're having maybe a huge impact, you talk about, and I would recommend listeners go to your website, jeanboland.com, and read this article, The Antidote, because you talk about the invisible power of women's circles and the circle of five women friends who started the women's suffragette movement, so the historical power of women's circles, too. We can't underestimate that power.
Oh, no. And just because you don't see it yet, to be part of something, a bigger something, at the same time that you are also doing something for yourself and doesn't cost anything. It's. I mean, this is a marvelous invention, a circle, you know?
Well, you also talk about...
Lifetime.
I'm sorry. Say again, please.
Well, a women's circle with a spiritual center that nurtures their women in it and forms a kind of grounding place for them to meet regularly could actually last the lifetime of people in it, because it's like a depth friendship circle in which, because there are others, not, you know, as we have our difficult times and somebody goes to the hospital or somebody has a diagnosis of breast cancer or someone has a child that's in trouble, the circle knows about it, holds it, prays for it, and maybe since we're all rather busy people, it's sort of good that the one person who has the time to go do something that particular week does it. Like in my particular group, one of us was in a really terrible accident, and somehow through emails and the visits that we made when we could, we really kept her in the circle and kept each other really apprised. Each of us who went to the hospital reported back via emails to the other. others, and she felt it. I mean, you do feel it if you have a circle of support.
Well, yeah, and it's that, you know, you don't feel disconnected. You feel connected, you feel nurtured, you feel supported, and, well, that's the whole feminine principle.
Right. Got it.
Well, you mentioned, too, in that article, and maybe we could talk for a minute about it, the UN Resolution on Women, Peace, and Security, Resolution 1325.
That one is it's like the UN actually is very wise. It doesn't always get to do what its documents say should be done, and that's definitely one of them. It was passed by the Security Council in the year 2000. And interestingly, it passed on Halloween as a date, but anyway, it acknowledged that women not only have a special interest but special abilities that should be utilized as conflicts began and ending it after. So it had to do with women, peace, and security. It can't make, say, women be present in the bigger arguments like in the Middle East where the politics are too big. But it's interesting that it still has an influence in some ways, and in smaller conflicts, it's directly had an influence. I mean, one of the things that really impressed me going to the UN and hearing about it at the first time I went to the UN, which was in 2002, and hearing the women from Sierra Leone talk about how peace came to that area after there had been civil war for years. And they imposed 1325 on the warlords to talk, so that they had to have women present at the negotiating table.
So 1325 is a requirement that women be at the negotiating table.
Well, it's the principle. That's the problem, that you can say that there should be women involved in every major effort to settle the problem in the Middle East, but, you know, unless the governments go along with it or can't have it imposed on them, the UN doesn't have the power of imposition.
But it's an important point that they acknowledge the presence of women has an effect on negotiations.
Oh, they do, and this particular occasion really demonstrated, because, see, the warlords do have this alpha male kind of, you give in a point, you know, it's you lose it. There's a difficulty arriving at a common good when you've been competing with each other and humiliating each other and all this for so long. And so one of the warlords was quoted as saying, really objecting. Now, the warlords at this particular point didn't have enough power to not have the women present. And the women had been involved, and they became present, and he said, what do we want the women for? You know they would just make compromise. You know, he was just outraged.
Uh-huh.
You know, everybody in the room at the women's hearing this would, you know, felt, well, yeah, you know.
And what's wrong with that? Well, obviously, you know, there's, you know, we have to admit that there's certain, you know, there's certain interests in our world that, you know, whether they're making money off a war or whether they're, you know, having their ego, and their power over needs met, you know, people aren't going to do the right thing just because it's the right thing to do.
Oh, absolutely not.
Well, now, Jean, you also, are you still involved with this other project on your website, Standing for Peace, this Mother's Day thing that's mentioned there?
I helped inspire it, and I'm hearing it, the website was up when I last looked at it, and it really got around. So,
okay.
I mean, anything that women do in an intentional way, and something as simple as reading that statement about what would be a woman's agenda for the world, and then standing for 5 minutes meditating on this, is to take a first step. I mean, I think it matters so much that women step out and up and have an intention and a realization that they could by adding their energy make a difference?
Well, you know, before you actually got into the show through the switchboard, one of the things I said about this time of the year of transformation and Bridget and that, you know, that water and fire of Bridget that makes steam, that, you know, that's sort of a catalyst for transformation. You know, one of the things I said is, you know, we women can't just settle for being the hands that rock the cradles. We have to be the hands that broker the deals that change the world. And you know, activism is everything. I think you even mentioned that on the homepage of your website, is to get involved however you feel called.
Right, and it is a however you feel called.
Can
I read the Standing Women statement?
Sure. Do you have it in front of you?
Right. It's for mothers to stand together on Mother's Day and affirm. We are standing for the world's children and grandchildren and for the seven generations beyond them. We dream of a world where all of our children have safe drinking water, clean air to breathe, and enough food to eat. A world where they have access to a basic education to develop their minds and health care to nurture their growing bodies. A world where they have a warm, safe, and loving place to call home. A world where they don't live in fear of violence in their home, in their neighborhood, in their school, or in their world. This is the world of which we dream. This is the cause for which we stand. This is Mother's Agenda. I mean, it's simple.
Well, and you know, I mean, it's darn, you know, it's just common sense, isn't it?
Yes.
We
yes.
make things so complicated, and if we just went back to common sense, you know, you can't beat it. Well, Jean, it has been delightful to have you on the show, and I know my listeners are going to enjoy hearing what you had to say. But before you go, is there any important ideas you'd like to leave listeners with, or advice, you know, what they can do?
I want them to vote on the petition.
Okay.
I want them to go to vote on a petition that the last time I looked at it, it had gone from something like 3,000 to 5,000 in 10 days. And by March 1, when the UN Commission on the Status of Women meets, I would like there to be 10,000 names on that. And all it's saying, I mean, it lays out the reasoning for it, and then it says that the signer supports having a fifth United Nations-sponsored World Conference on Women. It's as simple one as that. And if you read the petition, you get the education behind it. And the easiest way to get to it is to go to jeanbolan.com, and where it says click to go to petition, do that. That's easy.
Okay. Well, well, before you go, it looks like we actually have a caller. Let's see if the caller would like to ask you a question. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay, let's see. Hi, you're calling in from the 631 area code. Did you have a question for Jean?
Actually, no, I just had a compliment for both of you. I wanted to thank you for what you're doing, and I wish that there were a larger forum for all of us to hear this in.
Well, help us spread the word.
I do on a daily basis. And I wanted to particularly thank Jean Boland, because if I have a few muses in my life, you are one, Jean. You've spoken to me so deeply.
Well, thank you so very much for calling in, and I hope you'll stay tuned in to Voices of the Sacred Feminine.
Thanks very much, Karen, for bringing this to everybody.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's one of my joys. Thank you so much.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
Well, Jean,
I'm so glad I made it to your program after all.
Me too. Well, you know, if something happened and you didn't call in, I was going to play some music while I called you. So, but you know, well, it's only going to take folks 2 seconds to sign that petition. What do they do after they sign the petition? Should they go join the Million Circle or start a circle and get your book and figure out how?
Well, they should tell about 10 of their friends to go sign the petition too.
Okay.
If I inspired them to form a circle, which I certainly hope I did. The book, The Million Circle, will be a help. The website, themillioncircle.org, will be a help. And I say, you know, if something comes along that has your name on it in terms of activism, the three principles are that it's meaningful to you. too, that you get it, that either the people you're doing it with, the women you're doing it with, or it touches your creativity, that it's fun. So it's, and the last thing is that it's motivated by love. And it may look like outrage, but you wouldn't be outraged if you didn't love what's being hurt. So I'm saying, if you are drawn to do something that is a personal assignment, it is actually like a psychological growth individuation pathway. It grows out of who you are. It has to do with it being personally meaningful, fun, and motivated by love. And all of us who do this sort of thing, you're doing it, I'm doing it, we're having a good time doing it.
We sure are.
What more company?
Well, you know, I mean, this is, you know, I tell my listeners all the time, you know, this is what put, you know, this is what put gas, what puts gas in my tank. You know, I feel like, you know, we're each of us are doing their little part of it to make a difference in the world. And shoot, you know, I just keep saying, if women would support women, what a force we could be to make this world a better place.
Absolutely. And I also would like to know how people find this particular program, because I would like to tell some people that they could listen to it.
It's easy. You can either go to Blog Talk, and if you don't actually have the link for the show, there's a search box that you can put in the name Karen Tate, or you can put in Voices of the Sacred Feminine, and it'll show up. You'll see the archive shows from the past. I've been on Blog Talk since August. So all of the shows since August show up on Blog Talk, but I've had the show when you were on it earlier. I've had 2 years of Voices of the Sacred Feminine before I actually moved to Blog Talk, and all of those interviews still live on my website at KarenTate.com.
Yes.
Your old interviews there, Rhianne Eisler, Jean Houston, Matthew Fox, all of those sorts of people who have just been wonderful voices for the Sacred Feminine. They go to my website for the old stuff, or just Blog Talk Radio for the newer stuff since August of last year.
Good to know, because it's just good to know, because I couldn't find it.
Okay, well, you know what? I will send you a link, and maybe you can have your web person maybe put it on your website.
I will. I will do that.
Thank you so much. Well, Jean, it has been a pleasure. I hope you'll come back again and, you know, and be a guest. And hopefully next time you come back, you'll be able to tell us that this conference is actually happening and you can get us all motivated to attend.
I would love that.
Thank you so very much. And thank you for doing what you're doing out in the world, and just keep doing it, okay?
I will, and you too.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine. And as I say every week, this is where we discuss goddess, the divine feminine, the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminist consciousness, no matter what you want to label it, and whether the great she be deity, archetype, or ideal, you know, these are values and benchmarks that just might save our world. And our guest tonight was the delightful Foremother in Waste Shower, Jean Shinoda Bolin. It was my honor to have her on the show again. And she, like so many women out there and men, works tirelessly for women, girls, and the divine feminine. Well, listeners, I hope you stay with me. I am going to take a very brief 1 minute music break, literally 1 minute, and then I'm going to return for our What's the Buzz segment. And for that minute, I am going to leave you listening to, let's see, what will I choose for you tonight? Let's see, this sounds like fun. Dance With Me by Jenna Green. All right, so stay tuned. I'll be back in 60 seconds.
You'd had enough, but worry on your face I can tell. Did ask to drink and to stop you from thinking about your day of living hell. Well, the best of the play and the fiddler is playing the bar on time road instead of me. How I think it would do them good to take my hand and move.
listeners, it's time for our What's the Buzz segment, when I discuss the bees buzzing around in my bonnet related to what's happening out there in the world, whether it be about goddess advocates, issues related to women and girls, human ideals, human rights, ideals of the sacred feminine. You know, it's all the same thing. It's all layers of the onion. And I want to commend you out there because if you were one of the ones that actually went to the Feminist Majority website, as we had been talking about the last couple weeks, and signed that petition to help save the human rights activists, the feminist human rights activists in Iran, there's actually been some positive feedback. 20,000 letters or emails went to the Iranian government to release Nooshin Ebadi, sister of human rights activist Shirin Ebadi and other human rights activists from prison. Those letters have made an impact. So thank you for your support and solidarity, because it did make a difference. Nooshin Ebadi, sister of human rights activist Shirin Ebadi, and all arrested members of the activist group Mourning Mothers were released from prison. 1 million signatures campaign, founder Mansoureh Shojaei and a number of other Iranian feminists, however, have remained imprisoned. So please go back to the website. We want to keep the pressure on to ensure the release of these courageous feminist activists. Please go to the Feminist Majority website and sign that petition that goes to Iranian leaders and the UN. Let's see. An interesting statement was made by the Prime Minister of Australia for Muslims who want to live under Islamic Sharia law. And if you know anything about it, you know that it's a law where men can basically legally rape their wives. And this was the Prime Minister Kevin Rudd's statement. And this is what he said. Muslims who want to live under Islamic Sharia law were told on Wednesday in Australia to get out of Australia as the government targeted radicals in a bid to head off potential terrorist attacks. Separately, Rudd angered some Australian Muslims on Wednesday by saying he supported spy agencies monitoring the nation's mosques. And this was his quote, "Immigrants, not Australians, must adapt. Take it or leave it. I'm tired of this nation worrying about whether we are offending some individual or their culture. Since the terrorist attacks on Bali, we have experienced a surge in patriotism by the majority of Australians. This culture has been developed over two centuries of struggles, trials, and victories by millions of men and women who have sought freedom. We speak mainly English, not Spanish, Lebanese, Arabic, Chinese, Japanese, Russian, or any other language. Therefore, if you wish to become part of our society, learn the language. Most Australians believe in God. This is not some Christian right-wing political push, but a fact, because Christian men and women on Christian principles founded this nation, and this is clearly documented. It's certainly appropriate to display it on the walls of our schools, and if God offends you, then I suggest you consider another part of the world as your new home, because God is part of our culture. We will accept your beliefs and will not question why. All we ask is that you accept ours and live in harmony and peaceful enjoyment with us. This is our country, our land, and our lifestyle, and we will allow you every opportunity to enjoy all of this. But once you are done complaining, whining, and griping about our flag, our pledge, our Christian beliefs, or our way of life, I highly encourage you to take advantage of one other great Australian freedom, the right to leave. And if you aren't happy here, then leave. We didn't force you to come here. You asked to be here. So accept the country you accepted." I thought that was pretty interesting. And if you have any comments about that, please feel free to call in or email. Last week I started sharing an article with you from a site called mostlywater.org, and the writer was Bruce Levine. And this came out a few weeks ago, but it really struck me because I've been asking myself, why are Americans being so passive, so complacent? And this maybe partially answered it. The writer of the column, Bruce Levine, said, or asked, posed posited the question, can people become so broken that truths of how they are being screwed do not set them free, but instead further demoralize them? Has such a demoralization happened in the United States? Do some totalitarians actually want us to hear how we've been so screwed because they know that humiliating passivity in the face of obvious oppression will demoralize us even farther? What forces have created a demoralized, passive, discouraged U.S. population? Can anything be done to turn this around? Well, part two of this, and if you missed last week's, I encourage you to go back and listen. But part two of this talks about we are also broken by corporate government partnerships that render most of us out of control when it comes to the basic necessities of life, including our food supply. And we, like many other people in the world, are broken by socializing institutions that alienate us from our basic humanity. And they gave a few examples here. One was schools and universities. He asked, do most schools teach young people to be action-oriented or to be passive? Do schools teach our people that they can affect their surroundings or not to bother? Do schools provide examples of democratic institutions or examples of authoritarian ones? A long list of schools from Henry David Thoreau to John Dewey, John Holt, Paul Goodman, Jonathan Kozol, Alfie Kohl, Ivan Illich, and he goes on, pointed out that a school is nothing less than a miniature society. What young people experience in school is the chief means of creating our future society. Schools are routinely places where kids, through fear, learn to comply to authorities for whom they often have no respect and to regurgitate material they often find meaningless. These are great ways of breaking someone. Today, U.S. colleges and universities have increasingly become places where young people are merely acquiring degree credentials, badges of compliance for corporate employers, in exchange for learning to accept bureaucratic domination and enslaving debt. The next category of institution that might alienate us from our basic humanity is the mental health institution. Aldous Huxley predicted, quote, and it seems to me perfectly in the cards that there will be within the next generation or so a pharmacological method of making people love their servitude, unquote. Today, increasing numbers of people in the U.S. who do not comply with authority are being diagnosed with mental illnesses and medicated with psychiatric drugs that make them less pained about their boredom, resentments, and other negative emotions, thus rendering them more compliant and manageable. Interesting. Oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD, is an increasingly popular diagnosis for children and teenagers. The official symptoms of ODD include, quote, often actively defies or refuses to comply with adult requests or rules, often argues with adults. An even more common reaction to oppressive authorities than the overt defiance of ODD is some type of passive defiance, like attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder. Studies show that virtually all children diagnosed with ADHD will pay attention to activities that they actually enjoy or that they have chosen. In other words, when ADHD-labeled kids are having a good time and in control, the disease goes away. When human beings feel too terrified and broken to actively protest, they may stage a passive-aggressive revolution by simply getting depressed, staying drunk, and not doing anything. This is one reason why the Soviet Empire crumbled. However, the diseasing/medicalizing of rebellion and drug treatments have weakened the power of even this passive-aggressive revolution. The next socializing institution that alienates us from basic humanity is television. In his book, Four Arguments for Elimination of Television, Jerry Mander compiled a list of the 8 ideal conditions for the flowering of autocracy. And those are, Mander claimed, helps create all 8 conditions for breaking a population. 1, it occupies people so they don't know themselves and what a human being is. 2, separates people from one another. 3, creates sensory deprivation. 4, occupies the mind and fills the brain with prearranged experience and thought. 5, encourages drug use to dampen dissatisfaction. 6, centralizes knowledge and information. 7, eliminates or museumizes other cultures to eliminate comparisons, and 8, it redefines happiness and the meaning of life. I'm thinking of those old shows from the 50s where the mother was wearing her pearls, vacuuming in her high heels. Then there's also the commercialism of everything. While spirituality, music, and cinema can be revolutionary forces, the gross commercialization of all this has deadened our capacity to energize rebellion. So now, damn near everything, not just organized religion, has become opiates of the masses. The primary societal role of U.S. citizens is no longer that of citizen, but that of consumer. Then he goes on to say, can anything be done to turn this around? He says, when people get caught up in humiliating abuse syndromes, more truth about their oppressive humiliations don't set them free. What sets them free is morale. What gives people morale? Encouragement, small victories, models of courageous behavior, and anything that helps them break out of the vicious cycle of pain, shutdown, immobilization, shame over immobilization, more pain, and more shutdown. He goes on and on here, and I'm not going to read the rest of it, but I can't help but think that the circles I was just talking about with Gene would certainly do a lot for people who were feeling a broken morale. They would feel that nurturing and support, that connection with other human beings. So, again, here we go. The ideals of the sacred feminine could help Americans to set themselves free. Let's see. Last week I posed the question. I have a caller. Let me see if the caller would like to ask a question here before I go on. Hello. You're calling from the 619 area code. Did you have a comment or a question?
Oh, no, I was just listening.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you. Stay tuned. Let's see. The other question that I posed last week and asked for feedback via calls or emails, are you concerned about the anti-intellectualism movement, the dumbing down of America? If you have any comments about this, I'd love to hear from you because that's sure a bee that constantly buzzes around in my bonnet and worries me these days. We really do have to inoculate ourselves against ignorance and move away from a culture that perpetuates platforms that puts the needs of the few or the corporations before the needs of the many, the average person. Take, for instance, that new ruling of the Supreme Court that just came down last week that says corporations now can't have their freedom of speech stifled and can spend any amount of money they can muster and literally buy a political candidate. Corporations could literally on their own or pool resources, and I don't think this is an exaggeration, but buy the Senate and Congress, and it would be legal. Now, we all saw what happened with the health care thing. And because there is some regulation, there, you know, were limits as to, how much corporations could spend to influence the votes of our congresspeople. Well, think if you took the limits off. I mean, it would just be, our democracy would be gone. Everything would be for sale. Well, now, Republicans think this is the best thing since sliced bread. All they see are dollar signs, like always. They don't care about the voice of the people if they're getting rich. Honest, if you don't know about this, this is really vital. It might be one of the worst decisions made by our Supreme Court, which has become highly politicized and slanted to the right. Remember, they made the decision that got us George Bush. And this isn't hyperbole. This is a decision that could totally stifle the voice of the people. A corporation could run commercials full of lies, and you know when lies are repeated enough times, people believe them as truth. So they could literally have a candidate that was trying to make sure Americans have clean water, make sure Wall Street doesn't run amok again, make sure the average American interests are being looked out for. And if that platform works against the corporation, if it's going to cost that corporation a few bucks, this candidate wouldn't stand a chance. We are losing our representation in Washington, literally, with this. We will become nothing less than the United Corporations of America, and politicians would be bought to fill seats, and they just as well start wearing corporate logos, because that's what's going to happen if we can't figure out a way to temper this ruling. So, you know, watch what's going on television. Watch what the Democrats are trying to do to temper this ruling. This is just insane. You know, people who know what they're talking about are saying this is the worst ruling in probably 100 years. And, you know, I don't listen much to Fox. It really just makes me ill, but people I know who watch Fox and sort of monitor the circus that goes on over there are saying that this is totally getting slanted to their listeners as if this is something really good. And if people don't bother to tune in to another station to get the other side of things, they have no idea the damage that this could cause them down the road. Let's see. The other thing I wanted to share with you is an article from Nicholas Kristof. He's somebody you really should be aware of. He's an author of the fabulous and important book on women called Half the Sky and just sort of the condition of girls and women around the world. This article is one of his more recent ones. It comes from his New York Times column, and this time his topic is religion and women. And I'm just going to give you a couple highlights from it. You can find it yourself, actually, and read it all at newyorktimes.com. Just, you know, put in his name, Nicholas Kristof, and you will have the opportunity to click on his columns. He says, religions derive their power and popularity in part from the ethical compass they offer. So why do so many faiths help perpetuate something that most of us regard as profoundly unethical? And there's a colon. And what's unethical? The oppression of women. This is what we were talking about with Jean, you know, how religions just oppress women and, you know, they'll put money into, you know, stopping abortion or, you know, stopping, you know, gays from marrying or telling people they shouldn't use condoms. But, you know, they aren't doing much about the, you know, the plight of women and girls around the world. Nicholas goes on to say, it's not that warlords in the Congo cite scripture to justify their mass rapes, although the last warlord I met, he says, there calls himself a pastor and wore a button reading Rebels for Christ. It's not that brides are burned in India as part of a Hindu ritual, and there's no verse in the Quran that instructs Afghan thugs to throw acid in the faces of girls who dare to go to school. Yet these kinds of abuses, along with more banal injustices like slapping a girlfriend or paying women less for their work, arise out of a social context in which women are often second-class citizens. That's a context that religions have helped shape and not pushed hard to change. Women are prevented from playing a full and equal role in many faiths, creating an environment in which violations against women are justified. Those are the words of former President Jimmy Carter in a speech he made to the Parliament of World Religions in December. He went on to say, the belief that women are inferior human beings in the eyes of God gives excuses to the brutal husband to beat his wife, the soldier who rapes a woman, the employer who has a lower pay scale for women employees, or parents who decide to abort a female child. Mr. Carter, who sees religion as one of the basic causes of the violation of women's rights, is a member of the Elders, a small council of retired leaders brought together by Nelson Mandela. The Elders are focusing on the role of religion in oppressing women, and they have issued a joint statement calling on religious leaders to, quote, change all discriminatory practices within their own religions and traditions, unquote. The Elders are neither irreligious or rabble-rousers. They include Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and they begin their meetings with a moment for silent prayer. The Elders are not attacking religion as such, noted Mary Robinson, the former president of Ireland and the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. But she added, we all recognize that if there's one overarching issue for women, it's the way that religion can be manipulated to subjugate women. There is, of course, plenty of fodder in both the Quran and the Bible for those who seek a theology of discrimination. The New Testament quotes St. Paul in 1 Timothy 2, as saying that women, quote, must be silent, unquote. Deuteronomy declares that if a woman does not bleed on her wedding night, then, quote, the men of her town shall stone her to death, unquote. in Orthodox Jewish prayer, thanks God, quote, who has not made me a woman, unquote. The Quran stipulates that a woman shall inherit less than a man and that a woman's testimony counts for half a man's testimony. In fairness, many scholars believe that Paul did not, in fact, write the passages calling on women to be silent, and Islam started out as socially progressive for women, banning female infanticide and limiting polygamy, but neither continued to advance. But religious leaders sanctified existing social structures instead of pushing for justice. In Africa, it would help enormously if religious figures spoke up for widows disenfranchised by unjust inheritance traditions, or for rape victims, or for schoolgirls facing sexual demands from their teachers. Instead, in Uganda, the influence of conservative Christians is found in a grotesque push to execute gays. Yet paradoxically, the church in Africa that have done the most to empower women have been conservative ones led by evangelicals and especially Pentecostals. In particular, Pentecostals encourage women to take leadership roles. And for many women, this is the first time they've been trusted with authority and found their opinions respected. In rural Africa, Pentecostal churches are becoming a significant force to emancipate women. That's a glimmer of hope that reminds us that while religion is part of the problem, it can also be part of the solution. The Dalai Lama has taken that step and calls himself a feminist. Today, when religious institutions exclude women from their hierarchies and rituals, the inevitable implication is that females are inferior. The elders are right that religious groups should stand up for a simple ethical principle. Any person's human rights should be sacred and not depend on something as earthly as their genitals. Well, that concludes our What's the Buzz segment for tonight, and as long as you keep telling me you like this, and as long as there are important things to talk about, I'll be a voice for the ideals of the great she. We have to keep working to reach that 100th monkey, to shift that paradigm, to put that morphic field in motion so change comes, and it will. Let's use the steam of Bridget, the tenacity of Sekhmet, and the social justice of Kali to set this in motion. So with that being said, the bees are released from my bonnet for yet another week. The Four Mothers and Wayshowers series is still running. In February, we have the powerful feminist advocate and author Phyllis Chesler on the show. Also, Ava Park, center holder and foundress of the Goddess Temple of Orange County. Another guest will be Dr. David Hillman, author of The Chemical Mules. You're going to love David. We are going to talk about more authentic history of ancient priestesses than we usually understand from academia, which is sometimes clouded or skewed by the Christian lens. And for a change of pace and some fun, David is going to come on the show and dissect that movie that's coming out, Percy Jackson and the Olympians. And Christina Biaggi will also be a guest in February. She's an expert on Paleolithic and Neolithic goddesses. Well, it was you that asked, where are the Four Mothers and Wayshowers? And they are here every week, usually Wednesday night at 6 o'clock, and generously giving more of their time for you to hear what's stoking their passions these days. Now, remember, here on Blog Talk, we can take your calls. So if you like, dial in and ask questions toward the end of the interview or after my What's the Buzz segment. The call-in number is 718-766-4662, and talk to me. I'd love to hear from you. When I see your call on the switchboard, I'll identify you by your area code and welcome you to have a chance to talk to myself or my guest. I also want to invite you to please make my show either a favorite on Blog Talk or become a friend of the show. You can do that all from the from the show page. And I want to share some announcements with you that are important. First, if you're in Southern California, the second Queen of Your Realm convocation is going to be Saturday, February 6th. It's called Leadership, Vision, and Communication. It's held by Ava Park, who is the center holder and founder of the Goddess Temple. So that's Queen of Your Realm convocation by Ava. The convocation is going to cover why every woman must lead like a queen, like water, personal power, how the queen defines her personal field, how to hold the group field for the good of all, coming to complete clarity on your true identity, how the queen helps everyone feel safe. The queen is midwife to the realm, and radiating versus showing off. Let's see, other stuff that's happening out there in the world. Switching over to the other continent, the Goddess Conference 2010 has information on the web now. Full details of Glastonbury Goddess Conference 2010, celebrating the Goddess of Love is the theme. It's going to be held from the 28th of July to the 1st of August with some fringe events starting as early as the 26th of July. So go to goddessconference.com, goddessconference.com. There's going to be workshops and presentations, artwork, vendors, performances, music, song, poetry, dance. Like I said, go to goddessconference.com for more information. Back to Beverly Hills, California, on February 22nd, the California Museum of Ancient Art is going to have a lecture, Queen of the Gods, Mistress of the Two Lands, Great of Dread, the Goddess Moot and her Theban Temple. That's at the California Museum of Art in Beverly Hills on Monday, February 22nd. If you want information about that, you can call 818-762-5500. And in Claremont, California, the sixth conference on current pagan studies is going to be happening at Claremont Graduate University on January 30th and 31st. The Conference on Current Pagan Studies welcomes community attendance and participation in an effort to bridge the gap between academic knowledge and community practice. The topic for the sixth Conference on Current Pagan Studies is sustainability. What is the practical work that emerges from a sustainable theoretical framework? In what manner do we affect the future through writing, politics, research, and consciousness? How do we engage in saving the planet for future generations? Keynote speakers are going to be Donald Michael Craig and T. Thorne Coyle. You might have heard me say on past shows, I'm teaching at the Goddess Temple of Orange County, the beloved feminist curriculum called Cakes for the Queen of Heaven. And our third class called Woman Power will be February 13th, followed by February 27th, The Shift from Goddess to God. March 13th is Reclaiming Women's Heritage and Power. We take a break in April, and then we start the second part of the series. On May 8th, we're going to cover the Hebrew goddess. May 22nd, Sarah the priestess. June 12th, the Apostle Mary, or Mary Magdalene. June 26th, the Virgin Mary. July 10th, witchcraft. July 24th, intentions. It's $25 a class, and you can take all of these, or they can be taken, individually as the classes do stand alone. The whole intent of these classes, which are on Saturday afternoons from 1 to 4, is it explores women's power, past, present, and future, in the context of our religious history, including domination and subordination, suppression of the female presence in Judaism and Christianity, our access to power, and how patriarchal religious philosophy has affected relationships among women, men, families, and society's institutional power structures. So those are most of the announcements. Well, as I said when I was talking to Jean, and we were talking about the interviews that I've done here on Voices of the Sacred Feminine, I want you to know that there are 2 years of archived radio shows on my website that are just as current today as they were when the guests were first interviewed. You can tap into those free. They're on my website at KarenTate.com. I've had wonderful guests. So many luminaries and leaders and movers and shakers that have been working diligently for goddess ideals and to make the world a better place. If you do go to my website at KarenTate.com, please check out my articles at Examiner.com. It's kind of like my blog. I'm one of only very few goddess advocates in the United States writing for the Examiner, and you can find them by going to Examiner.com and put my name in the search box. Articles about me or by me will pop up, or as I said, there's a link to my column on the homepage of my website, KarenTate.com. I am thinking of putting together a tour of goddess sites to Turkey in September 2011. So I'm putting the word out early. I'm wondering if there's interest out there. If there is, let me hear from you. It would be a wonderful journey to delight both your left and right brain. You'd learn about goddess spirituality by day, visit archaeological sites, enjoy healing baths and Turkish baths, and immerse yourself in her sacred land, what they used to call Anatolia, or the nourishing mother. In May, I'll be in San Francisco. I've been invited to her church, so if you're in the Bay Area, let's connect. I'll give you the details. I think I'm going to be there around the 13th or 15th of May. I also invite you to visit the media page of my website and catch the radio interviews I'm invited to do. You can also go to my YouTube channel where I have videos of the Isis Temple of Thanksgiving, Sekhmet's Mountain Sanctuary, and snippets of a lecture I gave on the Sacred Feminine for a Sustainable Future. And did you know there are free downloadable meditations on my website? Yep, right there for you, freebies, because Goddess is about reciprocity. So I'm happy to give to you because doing the show gives so much to me. While you're there, get to know me better. You can check out my books, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, which has garnered prestigious endorsements. Shows you how Goddess was so prevalent around the world, across continents and cultures. Whether you're an armchair traveler or someone who actually has the ability to get out there, it does tell you how to get there if you're actually interested in being a traveler to her sacred lands. There are Gaia alerts that talk about people and species and places that are in danger of becoming extinct. There are goddess side panels that talk about important ideas and ideals of the sacred feminine. So it's not just a travel book. It's goddess disguised as a travel book. And my other book, Walking Ancient Paths, that's my newest, won a place as a finalist in the USA National Best Books of 2008 Awards. The scholar David Hillman has remarked that the book is immensely pleasurable, an enlightening journey, and stands boldly against the patriarchal denigration of the divine feminine. I really like how he said that. The book's divided, actually, into five sections. The Earth section covers spiritual journeys that I've taken and talks about these spiritual journeys to her sacred locales from an experiential point of view. The Water section is about our emotions and doing ritual and how you can connect with the divine doing ritual. The Fire section is about politics and personal transformation and how important the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet is to modern women. Let's see, the Air section is about how Goddess inspires us and gives us vision and activates us. So those are the four elements. And then also Spirit, it talks about how a contemporary woman, myself, could have actually found herself, although I came from the Bible Belt of New Orleans, now I'm walking the ancient path of a priestess of the Goddess. And it just shows how one never knows the path Goddess has in store for us. Anyway, please go to my events page, see if I'll be appearing in a town near you. And if you're interested in me giving a talk to your group, get in touch with me. I'm happy to travel outside Southern California if your group can sponsor my visit. There are also lots of articles and links on my website to people around the world making a difference. And I have a special for listeners on my books, cheaper than Amazon. Both my books are $25 plus shipping and handling. All right, well, that sort of covers everything I wanted to talk about tonight. Myself, pretty soon here, I still have to go cook dinner and wash clothes, and while I'm doing that, I'm going to be TiVoing the president's speech. But before I close the show for tonight, I'd like to offer tonight's evening prayer. And this comes from Jean Shinoda Boland's website, actually. It's the last page of her article, The Antidote, so you can find it yourself and print it out if you like. I'm using it as a prayer, but she calls it the promise of the millionth circle. So I invite you to close your eyes and take a deep breath. Bring yourself to an even sort of deeper focus as I share these lovely words with you. Okay, promise of the millionth circle. Start with women's circles, each one like a pebble thrown in a pond. The effect on women in them and the effect women in them have send out concentric rings of influence. Remember history? Remember how one age ends and another begins? The age of faith, the age of reason, the Reformation, the Renaissance. What was and always will be in one age is outmoded, superseded, and revised in the next. When critical mass, the hundredth monkey, or the millionth circle, tips the scales, a new era will be ushered in, and patriarchy will be over. So mote it be. Well, listeners, call an end to another Wednesday. It has been my great pleasure to be your hostess for the show and to have the opportunity to talk to these wonderful people. And I thank you so very much for emailing me and getting in touch with me on a regular basis and let me know that the show means so much to you. I will keep doing it as long as you tell me it's important to you. And as always, I'd like to leave you with a nice musical piece. And tonight, I think we're going to do something upbeat. We're going to go with The Golden Age by Dragon Ritual Drummers. So please enjoy this. Good night, and thanks for tuning in. And I look forward to you being back next Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And please, please do tell your friends about Voices of the Sacred Feminine. Good night. Thank you.